The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Do great things. They've got 2,000 Rand up for grabs in the Brutal Biz quiz. That's coming up just before 7 this evening in about 45 minutes time or thereabouts. We'll play the Brutal Biz quiz. That 2,000 Rand up for grabs. You've got to have your wits about you. You've got to have listened to the show or at least have a very good idea what's been happening in the world of money over the last week. And there's some sneaky little questions thrown into the mix. We'll also bring you some of the best bits of the Money Show from this week. And there've been some pretty classic moments. So we'll replay some of those just to entice you to, if you don't already, download our podcast from time to time. We'll download it every day. Listen to it on your way to work. Plug it into your car and listen to it through the speakers. If you wish, you could even use Bluetooth to listen to it on the speakers, so I've been told. So it's possible. You can do that, of course, by going to our radio station app, either the Cape Talk app or the 702 app. Click on the Life button and then subscribe to the Money Show podcast. Extraordinary judgment today in the Constitutional Court. The Constitutional Court doing the only thing it could under the circumstances, ordering that the current arrangement by which CPS pays social grants on behalf of NetOne UEPS continues on the terms of the original contract. No one's pretending it's a perfect solution. It's the contract declared illegal 3 years ago. It sparked a search for a new service provider, which failed. And then we were headed for a humanitarian disaster. 2 weeks from now, it was going to be a shambles. The contract has to now, though, continue on the old terms. Alan Gray, which had threatened to call a shareholders meeting to oust the board, seems to have toned down its messaging today. It said that the company needs to comply with the spirit of the court ruling. And that's a subtle difference in terms of the rules, because the spirit says don't take the mickey out of social grants and don't try and profiteer from social grants. Distribute the social grants as you are contracted for a fee to do. Freedom Under Law today saying it was pleased that there be strict independent supervision of the contract of SASSA, planning to ensure the payment of social grants after the 12-month extension period. And you heard from the chief executive in Eyewitness News with Tara on that particular point. Well, also Freedom Under Law saying that it notes with the serious concern registered by the court at the extent to which the Minister of Social Development and SASSA have placed a cornerstone of our constitutional democracy, the right to social assistance, in jeopardy. And just to read you an extract from today's extensive judgment in the Constitutional Court, the judgment, part of it reads, the Minister bears the primary responsibility to ensure that SASSA fulfills its functions. She appoints the CEO. There is little the CEO can do without her direction. Attempts to obtain evidence on what steps she took after All Pay 2, that's the last round of tenders which failed, to ensure that the beneficiaries would continue to be well catered for, drew a blank. Basically, they're saying that Buttebee Letlamini did not do her job. What did the president say yesterday? There's no reason for him to change ministers in this particular case. I think that's roughly what he said.
The Money Show on your number one news and talk station.
Well, let's catch up with the Director General at the National Treasury now. Lungisa Fuzile is with the South African delegation at the G20 gathering at Baden-Baden in Germany. The G20, the group of 20, is a group of 20 major economies. It first met about 19 years ago. I think it was 1999, in an effort to try and improve global financial stability. And Lungisa Fuzile, the Director General in the National Treasury, on the line to us from Baden-Baden this evening. We know that our economy, Lungisa, scraped through with 0.3% growth last year. Does the world still owe us a place at the G20 at the table?
Oh, most certainly. It's not the rate at which economies grow that determines who sits at the table at the G20, Bruce. It is the significance of that country's economy for either the continent or the region in which that economy is, or for the rest of the world, for that matter.
Because
in the second instance, it is also it sounds a bit arrogant to say it's the level of sophistication of that economy, and of course that those are the things that have earned us a place at the table, with the other G20 members. Yes,
because we are the only African member, right? Still of the G20.
We are the only full-time, full member of the G20. Countries come from time to time on invitation, either because they are chairing NEPAD or chairing the AU. So that's the other way that African countries end up here. But as you know, those are not permanent. This, as soon as their term of office in those other structures has expired, then a new country takes their place. In our case, so far we've been here from inception.
Now, we know that probably the biggest issue that's got to be discussed at the G20 this time round, it's the Trump administration's first visit to the G20. It's the discussion of global free trade. It's something that we hold dear, but it's something that Donald Trump and his administration seem to not care about nearly as much as we do. And I see there's a lot of discussion happening at the G20 on free trade. Any sort of clear direction yet?
You are so right. It is going to be on the table. It has been firmly on the table. I mean, remember the meeting started 2 days ago at the levels of officials. The U.S. is yet to formulate and come out with its policies on a number of areas. And this is one of the areas that we're watching carefully. There are signs already that it's not going to be business as usual. There might be changes in the offing, but of course, you know, in a forum like this, that is where such things have got to be broached. That is where the U.S. has got to explain itself in a way, sovereign as it is as a country, why, you know, as and when it takes a particular direction, it thinks that that direction is good, not only for the U.S., very importantly, but it's also good for the rest of the world. And indeed, most countries have expressed full support for the kind of way that the G20 has approached life insofar as trade is concerned. Trade, Bruce, is good for everyone. There is evidence to show empirically that it benefits the bottom 10% of the population of the world more than the top 10%. So such a development cannot be allowed to be undone very easily, even by an important country as the U.S., if, of course, the U.S. Tries to move in that direction.
Certainly, some of the commentary is that sensible discussions and sensible resolutions seem to be on the table. I mean, you mentioned earlier that one of the reasons why South Africa has got the seat at the G20, despite the fact that we're, in global terms, a small economy, is because of the sophistication of our financial system. And are you getting any sort of questions at the G20 about the state of the financial system? We saw chief executives in Parliament this week answering questions. We've seen huge pressure coming to bear on banks in particular over the last 12 months, with investigations being threatened into the way in which banks conduct their business?
Yeah, look, people do ask on the sidelines, but on a grander scale, people see that our government's initiatives, policy changes, whether it is the bill that has been through Parliament for the second time now, which is out of interest, keen interest, if I may say, insofar as FATF is concerned. They see that we're moving in the right direction all the time. They've given us until June, I think, for us to process that legislation. It looks like we will have it signed by the president long before that. If you look at the financial sector regulation bill, which is like about modernizing our financial sector, strengthen prudential regulation, at the same time pay attention to market conduct issues, make sure that banks, financial institutions treat their customers fairly, treat them well, price their products transparently, and so on. So they look at the framework and they see that we are consistently moving in the right direction. Mm. Of course, there will be bumps along the way. There will be bumps along the way. We have the history, and that history sort of sometimes influences how we engage in the debate on a whole range of things, as you saw this week, even issues relating to the financial sector. There's no problem with that. People, as long as the debate is civil, as long as the outcome of the debate does not undo the systematic reforms that we have embarked upon, people sort of see through that noise.
There must have been huge relief on that point around the National Treasury today. The minister must have been pleased today to see the Constitutional Court instruction that SASSA and CPS continue to pay social grants until another entity is able to do so. We feel like we've snatched defeat from the edge of disaster.
Bruce, I think I'm speaking on behalf of all South Africans. It is a huge relief for all of us. When the the only source of livelihood for 17 million South Africans seems to be under threat, all of us should be concerned. So the decision by the court brings all of us relief, and certainly it must be greater relief even for the recipient of Social Security grant. Now our job is, as the Treasury, make sure that the resources are available, and we're in Parliament earlier on. We confirmed unambiguously that there is money to pay both the grants themselves and to pay whomsoever is selected and has a valid contract to administer the grant.
Less happy today, and I'm sorry to sort of hijack the G20 discussion, but there are a couple of breaking stories today which I can't ignore. SAA's loss doubling from 1.7 to 3.5 billion rand as disclosed to Parliamentary Finance Committee today. That is another burden which is deeply concerning on the fiscus. Are you going to be asked for another bailout, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, look, people confuse two things, Bruce. The guarantees and bailouts, as in the form of a cash transfer from government to SAA. It's been a long time since government gave SAA money, as in taking general tax revenue to help finance SAA. But of course, I mean, the minister did say we have reached a point where the capital structure of SAA, the debt relative to equity, has risen to unsustainable levels. So definitely government will have to put money into SAA, strengthen the balance sheet of the entity. But of course, the entity itself is in full swing with the largely new board to make sure that it changes its operations, makes them more efficient, so that even when that cash is put into the business, it is not thrown in a bottomless pit, so to speak. So we will work with SAA to make sure that it is turned around into a financially strong, operationally efficient business. But it's going to take time, and it's going to take a lot of hard work.
I mean, the minister was very complimentary about the new board in terms of the new members of the board that did attend a meeting with him. I'm sure you were at that meeting. And the issues seem to be firmly in hand on that particular front. So confidence in the new members of that board.
They have interacted with them myself. I've interacted a lot more even with the finance committee, because we have had to interact at different times between ourselves, in other words, the board, executive and treasury, but also between ourselves as that collective with the lenders. I mean, people get impressed every time, you know. We would have the informal conversations with the lenders. People feel that SAA has got people that they can truly do business with. So which helps a lot, because it makes the job, which is looking impossible, a little bit lighter. But it is a tough job.
Lugisa Fuzile on the line to us from the G20 gathering at Baden-Baden in Germany. Thank you very much for joining us this evening on The Money Show. DG in the National Treasury, Lugisa Fuzile.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Gary McNamara, Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. We saw the reports today, and Alan Gray saying it's considering its options because it controls more than 10% of Net1 UEPS. And there's quite a lot of excitement that Alan Gray could go in a bit like the Lone Ranger and fire the board and everything would be sorted out. It's a lot more complicated than that, isn't it?
It is a little bit more complicated, Bruce, and I think they're holding through the various structures. If you include Orbis on the offshore side, it's closer to 30%. So they've got a very significant stake in the business, and I guess they're feeling very uncomfortable with what's going on in the media at the moment. And as you said earlier, I think from taking quite a hard stance yesterday, I think they're trying to go a little bit softy, but still trying to get the company to toe the corporate line and the court line, for want of a better word.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that statement from NetOne UEPS last night at this time, and I was a bit perturbed by it. I was wondering, where on earth did this come from? And it seems pretty clear to me that yesterday, Alan Gray read the riot act to NetOne and said, guys, you're behaving badly. You need to wind your necks in a little bit. And they came out with this quite simpering apology from the board of NetOne, saying, terribly sorry if you perceived our attitude as arrogance. Terribly sorry. We're so sorry. We're very, very sorry. If you don't think we're sorry enough, we'll apologize again. That seems to have taken some of the heat out of it. Alan Gray issued another statement just after the Constitutional Court judgment today, urging NetOne to stick with the spirit of the Constitutional Court ruling, which suggests maybe they've taken their foot off the gas a little bit in terms of calling a special meeting to chuck the board out.
Absolutely, Bruce. And I think that constitutional ruling has also been very clear in the process, the way forward. And there's certain conditions, and they've got to play very open cards in terms of the profitability that they're going to make out of the payments. It's only going to be for a 12-month period. So I think there are some checks and balances that have been put in place and asked for by the Constitutional Board. So I think it's taken a little bit of pressure off Alan Gray having to ask them to put that into place. So I think the Constitutional Court has come to help Alan Gray in this case.
Oh, it's helping. It's helping the beneficiaries. It's helping everybody in this particular case. I mean, the last time I saw shareholders seriously take on a board, I think, was PPC 2014 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
You see, I'm testing you now, Gary. I'm testing you. I can hear the cogs turning. I think it was about that. It's a big deal, is it not, for shareholders to say, we want a special general meeting because we want to get rid of X or Y or all of the directors.
Absolutely, Bruce. And, you know, my memory's going back. I remember Alan Gray previously, about 10 years ago, Supergroup, they were quite active in changing the boards then. And they were serious underwriters in a massive rights issue. And obviously, they made quite a lot of performance out of that. So they have got a history of getting quite active as a shareholder, and I think that's to the benefit of all our shareholders.
In Supergroup, that was because there was a business that was underperforming. NetOne is anything but underperforming. It's overperforming, if that's possible, and not for all the right reasons.
Correct.
So certainly NetOne has been very much in the crosshairs of its critics this week. What did you make of this week's market action? It seemed like a pretty robust week. We had that huge surge on a big volume day yesterday, and today a bit of a pullback, but it was overall, I think, a pretty good week.
Absolutely, Bruce, and as you say, the volumes yesterday, we also had futures close out yesterday, 57 billion on the JSE, and then today we were on about 17 billion, and then we did 12 billion in the last 5 minutes in the auction, and that was also the indexes being rebasketed for the futures market. So they're very big days on the market, but I think the big driving factor of the week move was the federal meeting with Janet Yellen, and the view that I think a lot of people expected. They have pushed up interest rates there by 25 basis points, but I think it was the comments afterwards where she was a little bit more dovish in terms of the way forward. The market expectations were probably for interest rate hikes during the rest of this year. I think she was keeping her options open, and perhaps even some of the consensus suggesting only two, that might not even happen. So I think that was seen as positive. We saw the dollar weakening on the back of that because there wasn't as going to be as much of a carry trade. And we saw certainly emerging market and commodities rallying quite strongly. And we had a very strong day yesterday, certainly in the commodity sector and the financials, on the back of a very strong rand that was back at about 12.75, and it certainly held on to those gains during the course of today. But okay, certainly less moves today.
You're teeing me up for the impossible question. Have we seen the best of the rand, or could it get better?
Bruce, it's a difficult one because if you look at it on a purchasing power parity basis, if you look at relative to the dollar, it's probably operating as fair value. But the purchasing power parity, which is effectively an inflation differential, it's not a great timing tool in the short term. If you look at it versus the pound, you would probably suggest the rand is a little bit overvalued. But both of those factors, you've probably got in the next 9 months some political uncertainty in the local markets, which could potentially lead to rand weakness. So if you had to put me on the spot, I would suggest we are certainly at a stronger level in the rand. A lot of it's going to...
There are people who don't know the currency markets who can say, we are at a stronger level. Will it go stronger?
It can go stronger, Bruce. I think the reason for it to going stronger would have to be stronger commodity prices going forward, which given the growth's there globally, but I think it's going to be still a slowly. I think a lot of the commodity prices have had a very strong rally in the last 6 or 9 months post basically Brexit and Trump moves.
There we go. Gary McNamara, Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Do great things. Time now for some of the best bits of The Money Show. The reason we do this feature is to draw your attention to some of the interviews that we've had this week, ones that have done well online, that people have gone and listened to. They've read the stories that have been written around the interviews. And we sort of say, hold on a second, if you missed it or you heard it and you want to hear it again, here it is. But also draw attention to the fact that we have podcasts. They are free of charge for you to subscribe to. You can subscribe or you can download them on a daily basis, however you choose to do it, from your favorite place to get podcasts, and you get The Money Show delivered to you on with our compliments. But time now for some of the best bits of The Money Show. Thank goodness the Constitutional Court has done the right thing to ensure that social grants are paid. And now it's up to CPS and SASSA to make sure that it happens. The Constitutional Court has ordered those two to make sure that it happens like clockwork on the 1st of April for a year, or at least until the state can sort itself out. What went wrong? Well, essentially what went wrong was colossal political failure. And then, of course, there was a company that capitalized on that political failure and profited from that political failure as well. So that is at the core of this particular problem. Magda Wierzycka, who is the chief executive of Signia, it's an asset manager in Cape Town, she's worried about the business model, along with Alan Gray, which expressed its concerns this week, so much so that it did say it's got the authority to call a special meeting of shareholders to vote on the future of board members. It can essentially demand that board members resign or get fired. Well, Magda Wierzycka expressed her concerns around the business of social grants distributor Cash Paymaster Services, while holding company NetOne Serge Benamont doesn't agree with her on some of the detail. These are her views of the business.
NetOne makes money not only out of the contract with SASSA, they also make money out of transaction charges. And just to give you an idea, you know, in terms of their reported results, they, for 12 months, this is to the end of June 2016, which is their financial year end, the CPS contract brought in a revenue of $1.9 billion. And I estimate that the profit on that is in the region of $392 million pre-tax. The transaction charges brought in another $1.2 billion in revenue, another almost $350 million in profit. But that's only half of the equation. Because what NetOne does is it's in the business, and you know, this is the stated business strategy, is to use the technology as an enabler to sell financial services to the unbanked low income earners, read in South African context, the grant beneficiaries. So what is it that they sell? Their biggest revenue earner is micro lending and micro loans. They sell funeral insurance and life insurance through a life insurance company that they own. They sell airtime and electricity on a prepaid basis. Now, last year, the court ruled that they're not allowed to make deductions from grant beneficiaries' accounts, from the Gridiron accounts. So based on a fantastic field study done by the International Labor Research and Information Group, what seems to be happening is that as people are queuing to collect their cash from the CPS-operated pay points, NetOne employs 2,500 salespeople who are running up and down the queues selling microloans to these grant recipients.
Now, Serge Belamont did take exception to some of her remarks, maybe all of the remarks, I don't know. He asked for a right of reply on the show on Wednesday night. We gave him that opportunity, and then we couldn't get hold of him. Asset manager Alan Gray found itself drawn into the debate and the debacle as the second biggest shareholder in Net One. This week it warned it does have enough shares to call a general meeting to oust the board if it chooses to do so. What was interesting about what Gary McNamara said just a couple of minutes ago was through Alan Gray and Orbis, which is its offshore investment hub, there could be as much as 30% of the shares in Net One that they control. It makes them incredibly powerful. And maybe, some people would argue, possibly culpable in terms of the business model. Net One last night issued that simpering apology for the perception that it's arrogant and uncaring. That did nothing to placate a caller to last night's show. Mary Jane, who lives near Knysna and George and Wilderness, that sort of part of the world, she's an investor with Alan Gray. She owns units in their general equity unit trust. She also expressed her concerns with the fact that her money was being invested by Alan Gray in Net One.
I have been feeling very grumpy. I've been feeling alternatively outraged and enraged. And so I have written to Alan Gray, and I also sent a copy of that to you and to other financial media. And I've been feeling sufficiently grumpy to seriously consider asking our financial advisor to seek alternative investments. And I think for me, it's an issue of principle. It's really, as an investor, I don't want to be associated with such a company as Net One. And everything that the CEO has said around this whole debacle that's going on at the moment has made me feel even worse, not better. And somebody from Alan Gray phoned me, in fact, just before this call, and I am assured that they are doing something. So I said to that person, it is very important that you let us all know what you are doing, because as a matter of principle, I still feel that they shouldn't be invested in Net One.
That's the view of Mary Jane, who gave us a call on The Money Show last night. Fred Robertson, the chairman of Brimstone, was in studio. The science of building a successful BEE business. They started with capital of 3 million rand in 1995. They went door to door. They collected the money from people within the communities that he and Mustaq Bray came from. Today, that company is worth more than 4 billion rand. It owns 6% of Grindrod, which is linked to Cash Paymaster Services, which distributes grant. Grindrod is the banking partner, if you like, to Cash Paymaster Services. I wondered then, if you are an executive in charge of your own business and you're invested in another company, how you deal with complicated, contentious, and controversial issues, just like the SASSA debacle. Here's Fred Robertson.
Well, obviously we're not comfortable with what it is and what we read in the newspaper, but I can't speak for Grindrod. It's another listed company.
But you do have a 6% stake in Grindrod.
We have a 6%
stake. You're either a happy shareholder or an unhappy shareholder.
Well, it's in the share price, so we're not that happy in terms of the share price. But I think that the issue of Grindrod is not necessarily just the issue of... it's unfair for me to be commenting on that, Bruce. And I think it's all there in the market. People can read about it. And
I mean, do you see yourselves as activist investors ever? Do you ever pick up the phone call to the chief executive of a company that you don't like something they've done, or you're concerned about?
No, most certainly we do.
You do?
Most certainly we do. We make the call. We, as we say, we are active investors, not activist investors.
Mm-hmm.
We know what it takes to run businesses. It's not just like some shareholder with one share that goes and sits and asks all these crazy questions. We are on the job 24/7. So we take responsibility for where we've taken our shareholders in.
Fred Robertson, the chairman of Brimstone. Was he going to act on the SASSA matter? And he kind of, no, not really. Another nice story that we did this week was Sizwe Nkosana, head of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, former chief executive of First Rand, former chief executive of Telkom, the founder of the first black-owned auditing firm in the country. Been a busy guy, as Sizwe Nkosana, our Make Money Monday's personal edition guest. He told us about his family history and one of the first jobs which paid him R1.50 for a weekend gardening job. Sizwe Nkosana.
Well, my earliest memory was really maybe not having yet or not having enough of it, you know, because
my children are going to tell one day. Yes, okay.
You know, when we grew up, of course, you know, my dad was a school teacher and my mother was a nurse. So we had some money, but, you know, we're not really wealthy. You know, there were other people who were much wealthier who had shops and things like that. So my earliest memory is actually working for money. You know, when I was in primary school, we used to go work in the gardens in the white suburbs. And I can even remember, you know, if you did well, you were paid R1.50. If you were not so lucky, it was somewhere between R1 and R1.20. So you worked there on Saturdays and Sundays, and you saved up this money, and you could do a whole lot of things with it, you know.
Were you allowed to keep that money as a kid? Did your mom and dad say, keep it, or did they?
We're allowed to keep it, yes, okay. We're allowed to keep it. So, you know, we're encouraged to go and do something and earn our own money. That's how we ended up working, you know, in the suburbs, in white people's homes and so on.
What did you do with your money? Do you remember spending it? Do you remember how you treated this treasure?
I can't really remember. I just know, you know, now and again there would be a gap at home and therefore you'd lend your mother, you know, some money and you get some interest back and so on.
So you
and
followed maybe, your great-grandfather's footsteps?
Yeah, of course. And then during holidays you'd buy yourself nice clothes, especially towards Christmas. So, you know, I had some money to buy nice shoes or nice toys and that kind of thing.
But did it form your mindset around money that you work for what you earn?
And yes,
you,
absolutely.
You then are entitled to nice things.
Yeah, sure. Mm. You know, that was exactly the idea that, you know, you can't just live off your parents and you must go and wake up and go and find a job, which was really not easy.
Sizwe Nkosana, who started many businesses, he's got another 5 that he's working on right now, in addition to the work that he's doing at the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. Those are some of the best bits. If you want more best bits, download the podcast.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
Time for the brutal biz quiz this evening, brought to you by MTN Business. I've got R2,000 for you if you're the whiz of the biz quiz. Give us a call right now on 011-883-0702-021. 446-0567. Which brand payoff line is your box of friends? Your box of friends. What is your box of friends? What is the name of the company? Give us a call right now if you'd like to play tonight's Brutal Biz Quiz and be in line to win R2,000.
It's time to put your business knowledge to the test. The Biz Quiz with MTN on The Money Show.
Diane, what is your box of friends?
Lion matches,
absolutely right. Peter Mountford, in our Shapeshifter feature this week, he bought Lion Match, the world's lowest cost match producer. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. What was the Commonwealth Games first known as, Diane? Way back, 1930 to 1950, what did they call it when announcers spoke like this and spoke about people running around the track?
The Royal Games.
Royal is close, but I'm afraid so far away, Diane. Glenn, would you care to have a go at what they called the Commonwealth Games before it was the Commonwealth Games?
Oh, no, I've got no idea.
Sorry, Glenn, but thank you for playing. Let's try Lyndon. Have a go, Lyndon.
Okay, the only answer I know is the British Commonwealth Games.
No, I'm afraid not, Lyndon. Think about what Cecil John Rhodes was trying to do. He was trying to expand something that Britain was very proud of. He wanted Cape to Cairo. He wanted to grow the... Mark, what did they call the Commonwealth Games before they were the Commonwealth Games?
That would be the Empire Games.
Empire Games is absolutely right. Mark, well done to you. The Empire Games. Commonwealth Games chiefs announced this week that Durban is not going to be hosting the Commonwealth Games in 2020. 2022. Which bank approached the High Court in 2013 to say, hold on a second, we pitched for the tender to distribute social grants, but Cash Paymaster Services got it illegally? What was the bank that was the other contender, the one that objected?
I think it was the Post Office Bank.
I'm afraid you're not right on that one, Mark. Thank you. No, the Post Office has not ever pitched for this business. Mark Barnes is pitching, and he wants to get the business, but I'm afraid not. Ali, which bank pitched for the business of distributing social grants?
I think it was APSA.
It was APSA. It was the contract that Cash Paymaster Services got was ruled invalid by the Constitutional Court in 2014. With the founder of which asset manager bases himself or has based himself in Bermuda? It's an asset management company that bears his name, Alan Gray. Very good. And Fidelity has just merged with which security company, Ali?
With Chubb.
Oh, Ali. Ali Bombaye. No, not us, Ali. I'm afraid not. So I need to know the security company with which Fidelity has merged. Who is going to get it right? Who's going to take away 2,000 Rand? Who's going to need an escort to protect them once they get their cash? Will that be you, Joe?
I'm not sure. Is it ADT?
It is. Joe. You're the wizard of the BizQuiz. Well done, Joe. $2,000 will wing its way to you. Congratulations to you, Joe. If you're in business and you know that the world will move at the pace of technology, so unfortunately does cybercrime. MTN Business understands the importance of protecting what helps your business grow, and that's why they are the ICT provider with end-to-end security solutions. With their collective experience and industry-leading technology, they can prepare your business for any threat. MTN Business cybersecurity includes vulnerability assessments, IT network security, email security, firewalls, and mobile device security. To protect your business, visit mtnbusiness.com/ZA. $2,000 for Joe, the whiz of tonight's Brutal Biz Quiz.